AK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The Senate failing in a 6-vote to end the shutdown. More than 750,000 government workers still furloughed. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
When it comes to those furloughed workers, there are hundreds and thousands of them. And this threat from the president to not give them back pay comes on top of the president's previous threats that he was going to enact mass firings during the shutdown and that he was also going to go after, quote, Democrat agencies. We've already seen the White House target projects that are important to some Democratic areas.
The IRS now says it will furlough nearly half of its workforce due to the lapse in funding. Despite a lower court temporarily blocking efforts to send National Guard members to Chicago, Texas troops on the ground there expected to be deployed to the Broadview ICE processing center tonight outside Chicago. That according to law enforcement sources telling the ABC 7 I-team. In Los Angeles County, authorities announced the arrest of a man for starting the Palisades fire in January, blamed for 12 deaths. This is ABC News.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.5 WLAK.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs have announced nearly $2 million in grant funding for two veteran memorial cemeteries. The grant funding comes from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Veteran Cemetery Grants Program, which is meant to help upgrade facilities, expand capacity, and improve accessibility at veteran cemeteries. The Central Wisconsin Veterans Memorial Cemetery in King and the Southern Wisconsin Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Union Grove will each receive a portion of the grant funding. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has announced he will seek re-election rather than run for governor in the 2026 election. Attorney General Call announced his decision on Tuesday, saying it's critical that the state continue to have an attorney general who will stand up for our freedoms and the rule of law. Since President Donald Trump returned to office in January, Call has joined over 24 multi-state lawsuits challenging federal actions. He's currently in his second term as attorney general after defeating incumbent Republican Brad Schimmel in 2018. City of Superior Mayor Jim Payne officially unveiled his 2026 budget proposal on Tuesday. Mayor Payne's budget proposal includes hiring more law enforcement staff and mental health workers, as well as constructing a new fire hall on the north side of the city. While spending on those services will increase, Mayor Payne also assured residents that the city's property tax levy will actually see about a 1.5% decrease. He credited strong fiscal management for that decrease, noting the city's debt has dropped significantly over recent years. The Downtown Hayward Business Improvement District is inviting area residents to their annual Fall Sip and Shop event this week. The event will be held on Thursday from noon to 7 p.m., giving area residents a chance to explore the downtown area and connect with new businesses. Residents can also get a Sip and Shop passport, and if they receive at least 10 merchant signatures on the passport, they can enter to win various prizes during the finale event at Angler's Bar and Grill. The passport can be downloaded online or picked up at the event. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
Brewers and Cubs in Chicago. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game 3 of the NLDS. After two wins in Milwaukee, Brewers manager Pat Murphy asked what is he expecting from the Cubs fans at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to be here a number of times in the last 10 years. I know how great this crowd can be, and how impactful it can be, just like ours were the last two games.
Right-hander Quinn Priester on the mound for the Brewers on facing the Cubs.
They know what they're going to get. We know what we're going to get. And it's just, you know, go to battle. And just, we're going to keep punching back. They're going to keep punching, see who comes out on top. And if we play our style of baseball and we execute the way we can execute on the mound at the plate, feel really confident in our team.
NFL, the Packers getting ready to host the Bengals Sunday. Cincinnati making a trade, sending a fifth-round pick to the Browns for veteran quarterback Joe Flacco. The Bengals losing 3 in a row with backup Jake Browning after Joe Burrow had toe surgery. With sports, on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear, patchy frost, and lows in the mid-30s tonight. Sunshine for tomorrow, a high temp in the mid-60s. Slight shower chance Thursday night. Back into sunshine for Friday, highs once again close to 70. Currently, it's 59 degrees.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
house.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. It's the Badgers and Hawkeyes at Camp Randall. Our coverage begins at 4.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 107.7 FM, 1450 AM, WRCE.
Hey everybody, Todd Allball here. If you've been to a Wisconsin sports event, especially a football game, you've heard his voice.
First and 10, Wisconsin.
That's Badger Public Address announcer Mike Mankey. Join us Friday afternoon at 2:30 as we catch up with the Badger legend during UW Homecoming Week. How does he come up with those iconic calls?
Run, Dane!
And what are his best Badger moments? Join us for a conversation with Mike Mankey Friday at 2:30 on the Todd Allball Show.
Todd Allbaugh.
If you're a Windows 10 user, tune in next time as we'll talk about the potential end for support, and we're giving away tickets to No Packers, No Life, the new Packers movie, next time.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Good afternoon, everybody, and happy Wednesday to one and all. It is hump day, and it is game 3 of the NLDS, the first pitch set to go off in just a few moments. Quinn Priester taking the mound for the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't know about you, but I'm extremely nervous. Also a big surprise in the Brewers lineup, Brandon Lockridge getting his start in the outfield for the Brewers. He hasn't been out on a major league field or taking an at-bat since late August. Keep your eyes on that particular position. See if we see a little action from Blake Perkins later in the game in response to Cubs pitching changes. I'll keep you updated since this game is going to be going on while this fine program is going on. So you don't need to pick between me and the Brewers. I will keep you updated. Y'all know if you've been listening to me for more than 5 minutes that I'm a little bit of an obsessive Brewers fan. And since we've started locally, let's stay with that local focus for our breaking news this afternoon. Reporting from the Journal Sentinel today is sharing this, that Donald Trump is cutting a state grant that it is intended to support special education here in the state of Wisconsin. This initial decision by the Trump administration to cut around $8 million of a $12 million grant was appealed by the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, saying that it had made changes to align with various executive orders from the Trump administration. And they defended the program as being essential and quite successful at improving the retention of special education teachers. By the way, there's never enough of these people in our public schools. There is always a shortage. Talk to any public school teacher and they will tell you this. This is a dire need here in the state of Wisconsin. The federal government, Donald Trump, responded on September 29th and said, forget you people. We're going to cancel the grant anyways because it conflicts with the priorities of President Donald Trump's administration. When is failing to fund and support special education not aligned with any president's administration? I just don't understand this. But again, I think it falls into the category of they really don't know what they're doing. It's all just slash and burn, and they're trying to break public education, not improve it, but to break it. This has been a long time plan within conservative circles. See only as evidence, not just this, But the siphoning of money over decades into voucher programs that don't have to abide by any federal standards and don't have to educate any special education students, that's left for the public schools, which apparently Donald Trump here in the state of Wisconsin can't be bothered with. Again, this means that about $8 million of a $10.5 million grant, excuse me, I misspoke a moment ago, a $10.5 million grant will be cut. This, in turn, will mean that several initiatives will be eliminated entirely here in the state of Wisconsin, including the development of an online training program for new special education teachers, a social media campaign for teacher recruitment. As I've noted, there has been a longstanding shortage of SPED teachers here in Wisconsin. Also eliminated, an online toolkit for educators about individual education plan. If you have a child that has special education needs, you know that each child is entitled under federal law to an individualized education plan. Again, eliminating an online toolkit to assist teachers in crafting those for each student that is entitled to them under federal law. Also being eliminated is a program called Warhawks Tech, which is a partnership between the State Department of Public Instruction and the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater that paid for special education teachers on temporary licenses to earn their master's degrees as they work toward full-time licensure. What is going on? I don't care what party you're in, but our obligation to teach and reach and provide an opportunity for every single child in this state should be something that we can all agree on. And yet, again, apparently Donald Trump doesn't give two whits about special education programs and students here in the state of Wisconsin. Also in local news, also from Journal Sentinel reporting this afternoon, the Microsoft Corporation has pulled plans that were quite controversial for a Caledonia data center after opposition from area residents and elected officials. According to a statement provided by Microsoft, they said this, quote, based on the community feedback we heard, we have chosen not to move forward with the site. We remain committed to investing in Southeast Wisconsin and look forward to working with the Village of Caledonia, blah, 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 blah. Here's the short version. They're going to put it somewhere else and hope that the community doesn't object to it. Pay attention to this. We've been talking about these artificial intelligence data centers, the energy that they pull, the grid stress that they place on communities, the fact that these are largely opposed by communities, the amount of water that's required. Again, we don't know the long-term impacts on our energy availability or our grid or our environment of these data centers, and they're popping up all over the place. So continue to watch this space here in Wisconsin as Microsoft looks for a community that might not be paying as much attention as the residents in Caledonia. Here is some big national news. Donald Trump's basically Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller. This is Dr. Doom. Sometimes it's a toss-up each day whether I call Russell Vogt the head of the Office of Management and Budget or Stephen Miller, Dr. Doom, or the undead. But both of them, fairly scary individuals. Stephen Miller was getting interviewed yesterday on CNN, and he said the quiet part out loud. And it is frightening. Take a listen to this.
I would note the administration won an identical case in the Ninth Circuit just a few months ago with respect to the federalizing of the California National Guard. Under Title 10 of the U.S. Code, the president has plenary authority.
Stephen? Hey, Stephen, can you hear me?
Stephen Miller knew himself that he had just made an epic error on live national television. He literally rendered himself silent. The words that he used, plenary authority, that is a legal term. And to be clear to start with, there is nothing in the law that he is referring to that gives the president plenary authority. And I'm going to just explain what that means to you. So what was Stephen Miller being interviewed about? He was being interviewed about the legal authority of Donald Trump to, as we discussed yesterday with former U.S. Attorney James Santel, to deploy the Texas National Guard in Illinois, or the California National Guard in Oregon, or California in Illinois, or deploying or federalizing the California National Guard because the governor of California didn't authorize it, or trying to federalize the Illinois National Guard because the governor didn't authorize it. Okay, so that's what he's being asked about. And in response, he says the president has plenary authority to do so. I want you to listen to this again. And by the way, CNN cut this part of the interview when it posted it online. But this happened live, and Stephen Miller just freezes. This is not a technical glitch, though that's what CNN said. When you watch this live, you can see Stephen Miller blinking, and he just freezes. This wasn't, again, like the feed got interrupted. Stephen Miller knows that he just spilled all of the beans, okay? So with that as background, listen to this one more time.
I would note the administration won an identical case in the Ninth Circuit just a few months ago with respect to the federalizing of the California National Guard. Under Title 10 of the U.S. Code, the president has plenary authority.
Okay. So Stephen Miller knows that he just screwed up. He knows that he screwed up so badly, he literally can't speak anymore. So the question all of us should be asking is, why was Stephen Miller's admission live on CNN last night that the president, by Stephen Miller's account, in Donald Trump's view, why is it such a big deal for Stephen Miller to say that the president has plenary authority over the National Guard? This is an incredibly revelatory statement that should strike fear into the heart of every single American. Here is what plenary authority is. It is unlimited and exclusive authority to do whatever you want. It really only exists in exceedingly narrow circumstances under the U.S. Constitution. An example of that would be the president's authority to issue pardons. No one gets to review those. He decides those completely on his own. There is absolutely no arguing about who gets a pardon. The president literally gets to do that entirely himself. But it is very plain to say, in a democratic republic where our founders created three supposedly mostly co-equal branches of government, that the president does not and never should have plenary authority over the National Guard or the military at all. And the reason is simple. If you look up the definition of a dictatorship, it is when one individual person, without any review, without any limits, can direct the military. That is not how our Constitution created the executive branch or the presidency. It's why Congress is required to declare war. It is why governors are required to deploy their state's National Guard. Now, I'm going to revisit this topic before the end of the show today. But again, if you don't believe what I'm saying, give it a Google. Do a little internet search. What defines a dictatorship? Here is what I found when I Googled that very basic question. A government where a single person controls the military and wields absolute power, i.e. plenary authority, is known as an autocracy or a dictatorship. What Stephen Miller just admitted on CNN last night is that Donald Trump is a dictator. That the view from those in the White House is that Donald Trump alone, one individual, can direct the military to do whatever he wants without any power of any other branch of government to review that power. Ladies and gentlemen, that means we have lost our democracy. And that is why Stephen Miller stunned himself into silence yesterday afternoon. This is a clarion call to every American to wake up and smell what is actually going on. Folks, we're going to continue with breaking news on the other side, so don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lake Air, 1260 AM, WLAK.
Amory Chevrolet makes the car buying process simple and painless. Whether you're looking to upgrade to something bigger because of your growing family, or you want the adrenaline and want the rush of a two-door sports car for a weekend getaway at the lake, Amory Chevrolet has something for everyone. Stop into their modern showroom today, and any one of their friendly staff will be happy to assist you in your car buying journey. Located along Highway 46 on Amory's south side, Amory Chevrolet is here when you need them.
Big Ten football returns to Madison this fall. The Wisconsin Badgers battle Iowa, Ohio State, Washington, and others to defend Camp Randall this season. From the grind of every snap to the roar of jump around, Badgers leave it all on the field. Be a part of all the tradition Wisconsin football has to offer. Single game tickets are available now at uwbadgers.com or by calling 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Together, we're Wisconsin like that.
Does a 2025 federal law cut funding for some emergency broadcast alerts? Yes. A law signed by President Donald Trump on July 24th rescinds $9 billion, including $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB. CPB, which funds NPR, PBS, and affiliates, announced it would shut down. Smaller rural stations rely heavily on CPB for weather and emergency alerts. Wisconsin stations got $8.5 million in 2024. The cuts led to a back and forth between Representative Derek Van Orden and Senator Tammy Baldwin on X over whether emergency broadcast alerts would be affected. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're rounding out breaking news before the bottom of this hour, but at 4:30, as we do every Wednesday, it's time for Broad Appeal. I am extremely excited about this segment because, again, if folks have been listening to this program for a while, you know that I talk about candidate quality a lot. And it has been a particular area of angst for me that Democrats have not in the past, I think, paid enough attention to the pipeline of candidates that we have. And I mean this in two ways. One, I think the pipeline has been extremely elitist in the past, meaning those only with connections or Ivy League degrees were generally given the nod. And the other basic qualification was tenure. Good party loyalists, folks that worked in their county Democratic parties or who took on lower offices and then proceeded along. That tended to be the way that the Democratic Party would select candidates. I think that is fundamentally flawed. I think experience, leadership qualities, having actually done some things and led people, and a really strong sense of public service, and frankly, the humility that comes along with those who have demonstrated a career of service is a much better way to pick candidates. And I'm going to be talking with a woman who started an organization to help Democrats do exactly that. Her name is Emily Cherniak. She's the founder and executive director of New Politics. I highly recommend you stick around for our conversation. And at the top of the hour, at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by former Democratic Party Chair Mike Tate and former Republican Representative Scott Klug, both of the Democracy Defense Project. We're going to be talking about this moment in our country's history. Let's return to the breaking news. By the way, it is now the bottom of the first inning. No outs. The Brewers and the Cubs are tied 1-1, so the action's starting early here in the NLDS Game 3 series. Best of five, folks. I've been talking about the fact that Mike Johnson refuses to swear in the newest elected Democratic House member, Adelita Grijalva of Arizona. He was called out on this yesterday because the last time the House was in a pro forma session, which it's like a less than their typical session, they're just doing some ceremonial business, Mike Johnson was happy to swear in two Republican congressmen. But when Democratic Representative Jim McGovern attempted to be acknowledged and recognized by Mr. Johnson yesterday during the pro forma session to get newly elected Representative Grijalva sworn in, Mike Johnson refused to recognize Representative McGovern, and a member of the press corps asked him about this. Look at Mike Johnson lie his butt off yet again. Take a listen.
There was a moment earlier this year, you swore in two Republican members during a pro forma session. So why not swear in Adelita Grijalva, who was elected 2 weeks ago during a pro forma session? Does it have to do with her 218 signature on the discharge petition, the Epstein discharge?
No, it has nothing to do with that at all. We will swear her in when everybody gets back. It's a ceremonial duty. We'll schedule it, I guess, as soon as she wants. It has nothing to do with it. We're in pro forma session because there is nothing for the House to do. The House has done its job. People say, why don't you do more? Let's do more. Now you should do something. We already did something. It was passing a clean CR.
Except swear her in, blah, 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 blah. Mike Johnson is a liar. He has been lying on national news about what Democrats are asking for in order to pass a continuing resolution. He lied there. When he refused to acknowledge the fact that he's giving preferential treatment to representatives elect if they happen to be Republican. And let's be very clear here. Representative Grijalva will be the 218th vote on a discharge petition to compel the release of the Epstein files. That is why Mike Johnson will not swear her in. I wonder how long he can hold this out for. I mean, you're going to have to swear her in. So why are you messing around with this? It's just ridiculous. Also, if you missed it, the Senate yesterday confirmed a block of Donald Trump's appointees. They moved to suspend the rules to get rid of the filibuster, okay? And then the Senate Republicans were able to confirm a huge, enormous block of nominees. And I call it the fealty of the feckless fabulists. That's who they confirmed to these positions, including the guy, remember Sharpie Gate, where Donald Trump's like, see, here's where the hurricane is going. And there was this Sharpie marker that expanded the area of the hurricane. Yeah, that guy got confirmed into a slot, as did a new gentleman to become, I think, Undersecretary of the Navy. His name is Hung Chau. And this guy has said some wackadoodle stuff. He formerly ran a campaign in Virginia and lost. And he was really concerned about Wiccans or witches. Take a listen to this crackpot.
There's a place in Monterey, California called Lover's Point.
Yeah.
The original name was Lovers of Christ Point. But now it's become, they took out the Christ, it's Lovers Point. And it's really, Monterey is a very dark place now.
Yeah.
A lot of witchcraft and the, right. the Wiccan community has really taken over there. And we can't let that happen in Virginia. Virginia is, I mean, especially down in Roanoke, they're God-loving people.
Right.
Richmond, too, and Virginia Beach. And we just need to mobilize Christians across the nation.
We're worried about witches, dude? Is it Salem in the 1800s? What is even... This guy is now the Undersecretary of the Navy. The fealty of the feckless fabulous, that is Donald Trump's appointee quality. Wow. Can't make this stuff up. Folks, when we come back, we'll be talking again to Emily Cherniak, founder and executive director of New Politics. So don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Democratic state lawmakers have introduced new legislation seeking to make it easier for families struggling with infertility to afford medical care. The Building Families Act, introduced on Tuesday, would require insurance companies to provide coverage for infertility treatments and fertility preservation services. Those medical services could cost families thousands of dollars currently, making things like IVF treatment financially out of reach for many residents. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss expressed support for IVF, but said he had not seen the bill yet. The Wisconsin Department of Justice has asked a Waukesha County judge to pause a court order requiring the Wisconsin Elections Commission to verify the citizenship of registered voters prior to the February election. The DOJ submitted the request for a stay on Monday, pending an appeal of the Friday court order. Circuit Court Judge Michael Maxwell scheduled a hearing on the stay request for October 31st. Attorney General Josh Call says the court order would require a massive overhaul of the state's voter registration system. Barron County residents are being invited to the second annual Patriot Palooza in Rice Lake next week to support area veterans. The event will take place on Saturday, October 18th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Moose Lodge in Rice Lake. Point of Renewal Integrated Health and Lake Roots Company will host the community fundraiser, which will feature a raffle, a silent auction, and a bake sale. All of the proceeds raised at the event will go towards supporting area veterans, and any veterans that attend the event will also get to eat for free. Northwest Wisconsin organizations are inviting area residents to a number of events honoring Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Officials from Embrace are promoting a number of events with various local partners, including libraries, small businesses, and grocery stores, in an effort to highlight the available resources for people struggling with domestic violence. The organization is also inviting area residents to participate in their sixth annual Survived and Incarcerated in Wisconsin letter writing event, which will be held virtually on October 30th. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Most movies have a climax. When it comes to When Harry Met Sally, there were actually two climaxes in the film, one of which was iconic and still talked about today. Rob Reiner was the director of the film and recently referenced the scene where Meg Ryan pretended to have the big O in the middle of a deli while sitting opposite Billy Crystal. The director says it was very awkward directing the scene in front of his mother. You might be asking, why did he invite her to the set that particular day? It's because Estelle Reiner is the woman who leans over and says, I'll have what she's having. Couldn't have been that awkward. Despite getting good reviews in his new film, The Smashing Machine, Dwayne The Rock Johnson says he feels bad. The film did not perform well at the box office, but Johnson still says he is grateful for those who went to see it. I'm curious to see his performance because critics say he was really good. Just a bit of advice, though, if you want to be taken seriously as an actor, maybe ditch the Rock part of your wrestling moniker. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 107.5 WLAK.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear, patchy frost, and lows in the mid-30s tonight. Sunshine for tomorrow, a high temp in the mid-60s. Slight shower chance Thursday night. Back into sunshine for Friday, highs once again close to 70. Right now it's 58.
Ahoy, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, Congressman Mark Pocan of the 2nd Congressional District about the town halls he's doing in the 3rd Congressional District, all about the government shutdown.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Wednesday. It is 4:30 in the afternoon, and that means it is time for Broad Appeal, where I bring on women organizers, activists, candidates, elected officials, and just other smart ladies that I think have broad appeal and have something important to say about the state of our politics. We've got one such guest today. She is my spirit animal. I was so thrilled and excited to find another person that has been thinking some of the same thoughts and trying to do something about the problem that I've been worried about for a long time. My guest for this next half hour is Emily Cherniak. She is the founder and executive director of New Politics. Now, what's interesting about New Politics is its purpose as well as its origins. And why have me explain that when I've got the lady who got it all started with me? Welcome, Emily. I'm so pleased to have you here. Thank you for taking the time.
I'm excited to be here, Maggie. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we were kikiing for quite some time before we got on the air about the problem that you saw firsthand that I have been ruminating and being very, very concerned about for over, I'd say, nearly 20 years, 15, 20 years. And that is the pipeline and candidate selection process within the Democratic Party. Tell us how New Politics came to be and the insights that you gained and the problem that your organization is trying to solve.
Yeah, so I was not political at all. And then I was sort of pulled onto a Senate race. My boss, I was a city year kid, I was a youth worker. And then my boss decided to run for the Senate when Ted Kennedy had died in Massachusetts. And I was like, sure, I'll get coffee and donuts and make copies, you know. But I was sort of stunned. That experience felt like, like in The Matrix when they swallow like the red pill and this whole world appeared before them. I had no idea what campaigns were like and the ecosystem. And it was super counterintuitive and not transparent. And you just didn't know what you didn't know. And after that election, I just was like, how do people run for office? And I was stunned that there was nobody recruiting people based on leadership or like whether they have, you know, done leadership things or a leadership rubric or, you know, nobody was thinking about candidate quality at the time. And so I asked a lot of questions around it and nobody was really doing that. And so New Politics was really formed based on this idea that leadership matters and that the lack of leadership in politics is not for a lack of leaders in our country. They're out there. They're just not running. And so we focus on people with service backgrounds, veterans, AmeriCorps, Peace Corps, people who have done public service, not because they're immediately the best people, but we think in that their leadership experiences in service, they've led teams, they know how to bring people together, they're able to sort of problem solve quickly without a lot of resources. Those leadership skills are really necessary in political life. And so our job is to recruit them. They're oftentimes not thinking about running. You know, they don't raise their hand and think like, I want to have power. You know, they're the opposite. They're like, how do I serve my community? And we really recruit them and get them to, and we're like a political Sherpa. We help navigate this crazy space and help them get them set up and run for office and hopefully win.
Yeah, there's so many things about the problem that you're trying to solve, Emily, that you saw in that particular experience and that I have seen from being someone that's very interested and not in the middle of the political process, right? That just from volunteering on campaigns, volunteering to run polling places and just caring and being involved a lot and having a family of public servants, right? My dad served in government. I've served in government for a very long time. My mother was a nurse, but just lots of folks in the military in my family, people that really came from this ethos of public service and who knew a lot about how to motivate teams, how to deal the very things that you're talking about, how to motivate teams, how to do it with limited resources, and that the driving force behind all of that was not, oh, I want to see my name in a headline.
Right.
But I have this expertise and I want to use that expertise to help my community, whatever size we're talking about, local, state, federal government. Many lawyers I know that went into public service to do the same thing. And again and again and again, I'd hear from these folks that were subject matter experts giving their careers to public service, say to me in a closed room or a private meeting, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that so-and-so elected official is this ignorant about this topic, or that they can't seem to find a clear sort of driving, centering purpose. They're bouncing all over the place. That has been not with all. There are extraordinary candidates, and we're going to talk about one of those extraordinary elected officials in a bit. But I think there really has been, whether you call it party discipline, a legit approach, valuing the right things, which is not access, elitism, your Rolodex, or frankly, how long you've been volunteering at your local Democratic Party. Those aren't good reasons to select a candidate. Leadership, knowledge, ability to motivate people, communicate clearly, those are things that show you what you think might be indicators of a great candidate and a better elected official than what we've got. How have you been going about identifying folks?
So we sort of have a very, in different ways, we get referrals. We have like talent scouts throughout the country. We have organizations that help us cultivate alumni. We get out and we recruit, and we just sort of ask a lot of people to think about running. A lot of people don't. I mean, I would say 10 to 15% of our people will get to a yes at some point. So it's a hard thing to overcome. A lot of people just don't see themselves in the political arena. And so through those sort of vetting, those sourcing, you know, we kind of bring enough people in that we think, okay, like you should run. And then it just takes time for people to get their heads around that and kind of think about getting ready. And a lot of people, especially veterans, are coming back and they're like, where do I live? I need to figure out where I'm even going. Right. So a lot of that's just sort of helping them map out their life, period, and the political journey that they, you know, are going to be on. So,
One of the other problems that you and I were talking about before we got on air was the problem related to many politicians just holding on for far, 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 far too long, and not permitting not encouraging, not being excited about bringing along the next generation of leaders to give them that experience, to let them grow their skills. I see that all over the Democratic Party. I see consultants that won't tell these elected officials that it's really time for them to pass the baton. And that, again, Emily, speaks to that lack of, frankly, really good leadership skills. Good leaders know that they need to leave. And they know that because they themselves had space made for them, many of them. They were recruited. There was a succession plan. And they know that you, in most jobs, you simply need a changing of the guard to keep the ideas fresh and to keep people leaned in and not, oh, there's nowhere for me to go up the ladder. And that's so true in politics. How do we solve that problem? You're trying to solve the pipeline problem. How do we solve the octogenarian, you've been here for 25 years, it's time to let somebody else have a crack at it problem?
I mean, currently, we're just going to take them out in primaries. So we have people. I mean, you know, I got my start with Seth Moulton, who ran against an 18-year incumbent in a primary in Massachusetts, which was not really done before in 2014. Yeah. So yeah, because they don't leave. So I think, yes, I think the Democratic leadership should role model. I mean, why would anyone else leave if leadership's like in their 80s and they're not leaving? So I think one, they should be role modeling the behavior that they want others to role model. And two, we will take you out. Like, we'll run against you fair and square. And so that's the two ways that will happen.
listening to all and having read about your organization and folks, if you're wondering who this big thinker is who's describing things that you have maybe felt intuitively about the Democratic Party, but perhaps also about the Republican Party, who I think on balance has done a slightly better job in the last 25 years about this, but they still suffer from that the octogenarian set not wanting to leave positions. But if you want to learn more about what we're talking about, you can go check out New Politics' website. That's newpolitics.org. Yes, they are a nonprofit. We've got their founder and executive director, Emily Cherniak, with me talking about this problem. So we've defined both the pipeline and sort of the entitlement thinking that creeps in for a lot of longstanding elected officials. You've talked about the things that you value in trying to recruit candidates. A demonstrated commitment to service, whether that's through AmeriCorps, other public service as a civil servant, military service. You talk about folks that have demonstrated leadership that can lead teams, that know how to deal with limited resources, and that can make decisions, right? That's the other thing. You don't have to be, you don't have to bat a thousand, but you have to make decisions. You have to be willing to grapple with complexities and information. We've got a candidate like that here in the state of Wisconsin that I am really excited that your organization is backing, Emily. And I think he brings to the table many of these qualities that you've been talking about. And it's Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He's running for governor. I frequently, when I bring candidates and talk about this on the air, I say, I want someone that I know can do something because they've already done something. They've already run something. They have a track record. David's one of those guys. What brought David into your sight lines, and why has New Politics decided to support Mr. Crowley?
So I met David in 2015 when he was thinking about running for city council. And I met him and I was like, all in. He's special. He's a real deal. He's a leader. And I was like, I will do whatever you run for, I'm in. And so we helped him run for city council. He was unsuccessful, but then he ran for state rep and was successful. And we've been with him for 10 years. And it's just such an honor to be part of his journey. He's the real deal. He's about service and community. And he's just an exceptional leader, and I think would make an exceptional governor for Wisconsin. So we're just so excited about his governor's race this cycle.
Yeah, I have, as his colleague, as I called him boss for many years when I was general counsel for Milwaukee County, and I was blown away by how quickly David learned about many incredibly complicated, longstanding, with all of these historical, you know, contextual bits, all these challenges that Milwaukee County was facing. And he came in and he did something that county executives before him had tried and failed to do, and that was at least partially begin to address how local governments are funded in the state, and to try to begin to address, in cooperation with Republicans, not just how local governments are faced, but the unique challenges for the largest two jurisdictions locally, the city and the county of Milwaukee, who truly are the economic engines of the state. Folks, we're with Emily Cherniak of New Politics. We're talking about, frankly, the new ideas that New Politics is bringing to the table so that Democrats and good faith Republicans who may be a little bit turned off with what they're seeing have the benefit of having new candidates that have demonstrated track records of getting things done, of leadership and of public service. What I call often the reluctant candidate. Did you ever really like the kid in class who was like, me, 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 me? I know the answer. Pick me, pick me. No. Is that who we're getting for candidates? Are we simply promoting based on tenure? Is that the best way to get the best people out in front of our constituents and help move progressives and Democrats forward? Emily and I think not. We discuss how we continue to do this here in the state of Wisconsin. On the other side, don't go anywhere. Do you know somebody who might make a great candidate? We discuss how to get them in the pipeline next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
you're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight flu, pneumococcal pneumonia, RSV, and COVID-19. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and help strengthen your immune response. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. Schedule in minutes at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported recently on a Maine ballot initiative pushing restrictions on voter ID and mail-in voting. Then mysteriously, on September 30th, 250 unmarked absentee ballots from Ellsworth, Maine showed up in an Amazon package 40 miles away. The plot thickens. Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows announced that both Maine authorities and the FBI were investigating. Ellsworth's town clerk received two boxes of mail ballots September 30th and notified the Secretary of State's Election Division that one box was missing 250 unmarked mail-in ballots and that the box's security tape had been altered. 40 miles away, a Newburgh, Maine resident reported receiving an Amazon package which included her order and the missing 250 ballots. The resident brought the ballots to the Newburgh town clerk, who notified the Elections Division at 8 a.m. October 1st. But that day, pictures of the resident's beat-up and retaped Amazon box surfaced on social media, with messages decrying Maine's election integrity. The conservative Maine Wire news blog quoted the resident as saying, "I am greatly concerned for our state and its voting requirements." GOP legislators seized on the missing ballots as proof that question one should be passed. Secretary of State Bellows remarked, "To any bad actor involved, you will be caught and you will be punished." We've linked to the local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Seems like nobody in America agrees on much of anything these days.
But can we agree the federal government shouldn't tax people into poverty?
If you work full-time, you should be able to afford your basic needs, don't you think? We're the Patriotic Millionaires.
We believe your full-time job should cover what it costs to live. We think your first $45,000 of income should be tax-free.
And multimillionaires?
We should pay more to fund your tax cut. Go to first45taxfree.com to learn more. A working-class tax cut paid for by millionaires. That's an idea we can all agree on.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Dr. Kristen Lierley.
At what point are we as a society going to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, something's wrong here? This is just the latest attack on women, on trying to control our bodies. They want women to have more babies. They don't want us to have birth control. They don't want us to get abortions. They don't want us to take medications. They want us to be in pain. They don't want us to have hospitals to be able to go to. They're defunding all of our rural hospitals.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I've been so pumped to talk to my current guest because she has been thinking about some of the things that have been worrying me for, oh, lo, now the last 20 years of being in public service, working on campaigns, caring about campaigns. Crying out loud, I used to be at Derry Haggerty's pub with my dad when I was about 12 years old, gathering signatures for Jim McCann when he was running for comptroller in the city of Milwaukee. Yes, that's dating me, everyone. Her name is Emily Chernak. She is the founder and executive director of New Politics, who's really looking to find new types of candidates, a different model to break the old, which was basically elitism, access, and tenure. That's how people would get tapped to run for office, and look at things like leadership skills, experience, a record of public service. Frankly, the best candidates, in my opinion, are often the candidates that don't ever think of themselves as candidates. Emily, thank you for the work that you're doing. When we talk about qualities or particular sorts of experiences, we've talked a bit about County Executive David Crowley, candidate for governor here in the state of Wisconsin. Who are a couple of other candidates that your organization, New Politics, have worked with that you think exemplify what we're talking about here?
Yes. Thanks, Maggie. I think, you know, some of our other candidates that we've helped elect, Abigail Spangberger, who we helped elect in 2018, who's ran for Congress, and she's now, fingers crossed, about to be governor of Virginia. I think she's really, you know, and I think Eugene Vindman, who became elected in actually Abigail's seat that she vacated when she ran for governor. And I think these type of, we say servant leaders, people who are about country first, you know, they always say like, when I was in a mission or when I was doing my work, like I didn't turn to the person to the left or right and say, are you Republican or a Democrat? Just want to check before I like, before we solve problems together, right? They just went and they solved problems. And so I think regardless of anything, these are country first, community first problem solvers that are really about how do we get things done? They have the courage to be straight talkers. They're not caught in like these rhetoric and talking points. They're not afraid to tell the truth. And they're really there to kind of fix things and work together to achieve a goal to make our country better. And their framing is what is in the best interest of our country. You know, that is how they first think about decision-making. So imagine if like everyone in politics thought that way, we would have a very different country. And that's our goal at New Politics.
I really think you're on to something when you start with those who have a demonstrated commitment to public service, who didn't mm-hmm. do it in the limelight, right? Who in many ways shied away from that because right. it shows you that what they did this for an incredibly altruistic reason. If you look at Ms. Spanberger, Mr. Vindman, Mr. Crowley, these are people that could have done many, many other things. And many yeah. of them did do other things right. before running. So to me, it gives me this certainty or this assurance, perhaps, that their heart and their head are in the right place. And because of that, when I listen to people like that talk about it, you can never dispute the genuineness of their care and concern. You can never dispute that they are trying to, again, not put their ambition as their right. first item of importance, but that their ambition is wholly secondary. All candidates have some ambition. That's what gets them going. Okay. I don't think there's anything yeah. wrong with that, but that they really are leading with a service first mentality. And I think while Republicans have been perhaps better at developing pipeline, they have developed pipeline by ostensibly appealing to young conservatives yeah. from a selfish mentality. You can become powerful. You can have access. You can control what's happening if you get involved. It's this very individualistic mm-hmm. viewpoint. And this feels, Emily, completely differently. I wanted you to speak directly to some of our listeners out there, Emily, and yeah. we'll come back to Mr. Crowley. But I wanted you to tell them, what should they be asking their party leadership about, hey, how are you finding new candidates? Who should they be thinking about asking about? Like, you know, if you see somebody who's been around in an elected office, what are good questions to be asking party leaders at your county level, at the state level, to help encourage this sort of a better selection of candidates, candidly?
I think it's just asking, how do you think about leadership? How are you recruiting candidates? What are you vetting them on? How are you picking who you think should be the best candidate in this race? I mean, I think just starting to unpack and talk about what is the process that party leaders are using to recruit people to run, I think is really helpful. The more transparent we can be, I think the better. And the more honest people can be. They might say, look, I don't actually know how to recruit people, but I'm put in this job and I don't know what I'm doing. That's helpful to say because we can get them support, right? So I just think being honest and open and asking direct questions about recruitment is really important instead of assuming that something is happening.
I also think I'll go this bridge or cross this bridge with you. Ask them, how do you talk to long tenured elected officials about their succession planning? Just ask them yeah. the question. If you know yeah. a longstanding elected official, ask them, how do you know when it's time to go? How is your mind working on that? And don't let yeah. them get away with like the talking point answer. Oh, I'm just loving serving. Like, hey, sometimes we just need to pass the baton because new blood is good and it gives people, yes. other people, experience and access and opportunity. Folks, if you know someone who might be a great candidate, Emily, who should they reach out to you? How do they suggest someone if they think somebody might be a great candidate that fits this rubric that you're describing?
Yeah, I mean, I would go to our website, newpolitics.org. You can fill out a form and you can recommend people. And either way, just send us information. We are happy to talk to anybody and convince them to run.
Folks, again, that is newpolitics.org. We've spent a half an hour and we will spend more time with you, Emily, I guarantee, because this topic, this challenge is not going anywhere. Democrats Centrists, independents, and good faith Republicans deserve to see the highest quality service-minded candidates out there. I'm sick of the egomaniacs. I don't know about you. Thank you, yeah. Emily Cherniak.
Thanks for founder, having me, Maggie.
Yeah, the executive director of New Politics. When I come back, I'm going to be talking with former head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Maybe I'll ask him a couple questions about this. And former Representative Scott Klug, a Democrat and a Republican. They're with the Democracy Defense Project talking about how to ensure that we've got full participation in our elections. Maybe we'll get into this candidate chat a bit more, too. So keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Despite legal challenges, 300 Illinois Guardsmen, along with 200 Texas Guardsmen, have been mobilized for a federal protection mission in the Chicago area. Texas National Guard troops expected to be deployed to the Broadview Ice Processing Center outside Chicago, according to law enforcement sources telling the ABC 7 I-Team. ABC's Louis Martinez has more.
U.S. NORTHCOM, these forces of the Texas National Guard, what they are doing and what they are going to do is to protect federal facilities and more specifically any ICE personnel located in the area there in Chicago.
Hearings take place tomorrow in appellate courts on deployments to both Chicago and Portland, Oregon. Another vote to end the shutdown failing in the Senate today. 750,000 workers furloughed for an eighth day, and now the IRS says it will furlough half of its workforce. A 29-year-old Florida man has been arrested for igniting the fire that grew into the deadly Palisades fire in January. He's facing 20 years in prison. Police accusing Jonathan Rinderneck of deliberately setting the blaze. This is ABC News.
107.